on our sheet here of the wolf management plan. Representative McNamara.
Well, could I just clarify, in the last motion we made, I'm not sure that the repealers all got the, what the one that there was one that was different that my motion made, but just to clarify, I also included all the repealers that were same and similar.
I understood that that was the motion. Mr. Knopf?
Yes, Mr. Chair, since all of them were, they would have been on the identical list but for that one repealer. So by adopting that on the Senate side, I mean, they're all identical. You could just put a motion up there to adopt them or just clarify that that was your motion.
I clarify that that was motion on the record, Representative McNamara.
I will clarify that was my motion to also adopt all those similar repealers.
All right. Representative McNamara makes a motion to adopt all the similar repealers, and this is reference to the, since this was a Senate position, will you one more time, Mr. Knopf, tell us what that's in reference to for the record, since we're just coming back.
Mr. Chair, I think what you're doing here is on page R29, if you look at section 66 on the Senate side, you're adopting the Senate repealer section. Clearly they're the same in both sides, except for the one dealing with the game and dealing with the ice fishing contest.
Okay. Is there any questions on that? All in favor of the motion of the McNamara motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. All right. So we are now on our sheet here following at the Wolf Management Plan, and since Senator Hoffman isn't here right now, we're going to skip over that, and we're also going to move the muskie language to the last items that we take up here in the conference committee. Does anyone have an objection with that in the committee? Okay. So the next item that we would take up is the differences in the language on in the House on Section 50, Senate Line 57 on pages R25 and R27. And the difference is that in the Senate, I believe you appropriate the entire balance of the Heritage Enhancement Account, and in the House, we carve out $100,000 for the Itasca Gun Club.
Mr. Chair,
is that correct?
Quite right. Both sides have the Itasca Gun Club.
Okay.
What the Senate does is it gives the DNR more flexibility with the rest of the money for establishing basic hunter education, firearm safety, and archery ranges on public land. What the House does is puts it into the new program. Now, this is also under discussion in the budget bill. And the question is whether or not, in fact, that some of the discussion, the Senate put $2 million of game and fish money into the new program in the budget bill, and this was what the House put in. I'm trying to remember the exact dollar amount. It's less than $200,000.
Right. It's about $165,000, $164,000. It was the balance of the $300,000 that was appropriated in 2009. For a master plan shooting facility in the metropolitan area.
And Mr. Chair, where the Senate was going to spend that money is to allow the DNR some flexibility to establish ranges on public land. That was at the request of DNR.
Yeah, well, we're not going to be doing anything on that the DNR wants tonight. We're going to take the House language and put it in the all of the money, either in the Itasca, as we had agreed upon, or at least the House members are, and put the balance in the trap shooting facilities that we already spoke about and corrected the language that Senator Knopf suggested. So I'll move the House language. Discussion on the House language. Anyone in the audience? DNR, you want to talk about that?
Mr. Chairman, members, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We would obviously prefer the Senate language on this, but where we're at, I think we've talked about the appropriation that's in the Supplemental Budget Conference Committee. We are supportive of that. We're also trying to figure out how we can do more of these types of things with some Pittman Robertson dollars that we're receiving. So we'll be working with the Budget Oversight Committee and other interested folks, Trap League, Minnesota State Trap High School League as well. I plan on having a meeting with them right after session to do this. What we wanted to be able to do is free up the remainder of this appropriation to allow us to develop backstop shooting facilities for firearm safety activities on public lands. Carlos Avery Wildlife Management Area, for example, would be a great spot to do that. so we can help meet the demand for instructors in these range field days that are occurring for both online and regular classroom training. So that was our intention with this. I understand, Mr. Chairman, your passion and your concern to make sure we have the facilities available for these youth to participate in this growing sport, but we feel that we're going to have that and more in the future. So it was our intention to allow a little bit of flexibility with the remainder of that appropriation.
I would, if we can come up with some language that says that the balance of the $300,000 appropriation is used for the trap shooting, and that, no, I like the language the way I have it. further discussion.
Tim Ackerman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, is in the omnibus bill, does that money give you the flexibility if you get that $2 million or whatever it is? Does that give you flexibility to do the things that are in the Senate bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, no, that would be for grants to shooting clubs, basically, to help them build out or install new facilities.
But
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, is it only for trap, or would it be, why wouldn't it allow you to do some of the things you want to do? I'm just thinking, if you got a bigger pot of money, we really need a center. If we're only talking less than $300,000, we need it to go to this high school trap program, I really do believe. You sure you can't use the money more broadly in the $2 million?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I can pull up that language in the side-by-side. Mr. Knopf might be able to help as well. I believe it is fairly restrictive to clubs for trap shooting upgrades.
Yeah, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, it's basically the same language that you've already adopted on the program. What the Senate did was put $2 million in new game and fish money into the grants, and then you allow the department some flexibility with the $164,000 or whatever is left over in the previous appropriation. So they would have flexibility in the $164,000 and then $2 million in new money that would just be for grants to clubs. And that's the way the Senate structured this program.
If the Mr. Knopf, if the in the House budget bill, there was only the two pieces, the balance of the Heritage Enhancement Account.
Right.
And so what I have concern over with the department, and I think that every member that's done business with them from time to time runs into this, is that we get off and doing all kinds of different things than what a member originally intended to. And, I mean, a trap shooting range costs $75,000 to build. And that's on a range that's already has some development. And that half at a 50-50 cost share is $37,500. You start doing the math, let's say that they settle on some number less than $2 million at the end of the day. That isn't a lot of ranges when you got 6,000 kids and going up. And, you know, I mean... that's what my intention is to put it into the trap shooting. And so that's the reason I moved the House language. Further discussion by the members.
You know, Mr. Chair, if you would entertain, maybe we could set this provision aside and come back to it at the end of the discussion.
Okay, we'll put that with the wolf in the sure. I'll withdraw my motion then.
All right.
Okay, we'll put that with the wolf. Now we have the Loring Park Lake Cattail Control, and there's apparently an amendment.
We do have an amendment. Mr. Knopf can pass it. It's the A-12 amendment. And this is an amendment that reflects some recent dialogue between a variety of stakeholders, including the Park Board and Senator Dibble, who came to us with this language in the first place. And perhaps at this stage we could ask for some testimony to update us on the latest in the conversations.
Okay, first off, Senator Schmidt moves amendment
A-12.
And let that get passed out. Mr. Meyer, to the A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, both bills, the House and the Senate, had language in it dealing with a general permit for Loring Lake for cattail removal. The Senate language said unrestricted permit. Once Through the process of this bill progressing, we've sat down and have met with the Minneapolis Park Board. They are in possession of several permits that we have amended that are going to allow them to do this work right now. So we've been working with the Parks Board and Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein on this language. And actually, we think this is a peace in the valley compromise agreement that we're supporting. And you'll see the language allow it. It says, pursuant to the permits issued in 97 and 2014, they can remove all hybrid and arrowleaf cattails by mechanical removal and chemical control, and then replant the shoreline with native species. What they really want to do is restore this pond to its natural state. And actually, it's a little bit different than some of the other issues we have where this was, I believe, created. There's a liner in the pond. It's not a regular lake that our aquatic plant management permits are designed to deal with. In addition, there is language in the supplemental budget bill that will fund, and we will come back with a report on hybrid cattail management within these shallow water basins that aren't really a lake where people are fishing. This is more of a recreational pond than any recreational lake than anything else. So we do support this language. I do believe the mechanical removal would allow for cutting as well. It was a question that we've had. I'm trying to clarify that with our staff. I think we can make sure that will deal with that issue. And they're in close working relationships with us on the revegetation as well. So we do support the language.
Mr. Rice.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Brian Rice. I'm the general counsel for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and also represent them at the legislature. Just to complete the record, these were bills that were brought forward by Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein. They were brought earlier in the year. In the course of the legislative session, we have secured three permits from the DNR to achieve the Park Board's goal of removing all of the cattails from Loring Pond. We've worked with the DNR. It can be accomplished in either through mechanical means, which I understand includes cutting, and chemical or dredging. We can either cut them, we can dredge out the pieces. Just to correct the record, Loring Lake was a lake originally. It sits in a riverbed area, but as you all know, it's right next to downtown Minneapolis, and it's essentially bordered by two interstate highways, I-94 as it bends around in Minneapolis. So it's a fairly unique area. It does have a liner on the bottom of the lake or pond, as Mr. Meyer said, and I think it started out as a lake. It's probably evolved into almost a very large holding pond for downtown. It has a very limited outlet. It's in an area in Minneapolis which is urbanizing and seeing a very intense area. The neighbors are very concerned about it. It's gotten the Park Board's attention. Our staff has, for lack of a better word, maybe struggled with the DNR, but we now believe, as Mr. Meyer said, that we have peace in the valley, that there's a clear vision that we'll come in and remove all these cattails. We will replant so there'll be native species around the lake. We will not need a vegetative management plan, and we'll take this legislative authority along with the permits and get the job done. For the record, it's going to be very expensive. I mean, one estimate is that this might cost us $700,000, and that's an enormous financial number. We hope with this legislation, with these permits, we can find a way to make it not that expensive, but the Park Board is committing to getting this job done. Senator Dibble, I think, told you, Senator Schmidt, that if this doesn't work, he may be back next year, and we don't want to be back next year, believe me.
Representative Isaacson.
Just out of curiosity, when you say you're going to dredge, remove, and then mechanical remove, and then chemical control, how does the chemical control work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, I'm not an expert in it, but I've spent enough time with our staff that apparently one way to do it is you cut them to some level, treat them, and eventually just try to kill the there's either spores or something that get into the ground, and these cattails grow into the ground, and actually they proliferate out and grow into the water. So they start on the shoreline all the way around, and they grow in, and they're very, very virulent cattails. I mean, they grow, they double or triple in one season.
Does it affect the fish life?
Isaacson.
Sorry, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, I don't know the answer to that. I don't believe there may be some fish in Loring, but it's a fairly shallow lake.
And some fish.
And it's, but I don't know the answer to that.
Other testifiers or questions for these witnesses? Other testifiers on the A-12 amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I could just add that we've been chatting throughout the day with Senator Dibble and other stakeholders, and this is the language that he prefers at this stage to move the ball forward. For those in the audience who might be concerned.
I can confirm that, Mr. Chair Dill, that yes, I've talked to Senator Dibble, and he's given his approval to this language.
Line 1.17, oral amendment. Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.7 of the amendment, delete hybrid and insert hybrid. It's just a typo.
Thank you. Senator Schmidt incorporates that in his amendment, the A-12. In favor of the amendment, say aye. Oh, Representative McNamara, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rice, do you know why it says only replant the shoreland? Is there a reason why you're not going to use any water plants? Did you say the lake has actually got a liner in the entire lake? Did I hear that from Mr. Meyer? Is the lake actually got a rubber liner in it?
Mr. Rice.
Mr. Chair, there is a liner. I don't know that it's rubber. It's some sort of material, perhaps synthetic, and it's not the entire lake. There is a littoral zone of several feet where the liner does not cover all the way to the shoreline. There's some spacing between the shoreline and where the liner begins.
Jim McNamara.
No, that's fine. I was just trying to understand. So is the intent here to only plant the shoreland? And I'm trying to understand why would this language allow them to do water plants if they want native plants? Mr. Meyer is shaking yes, so that answers
Mr.
my
Meyer.
Question.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think the intention is to revegetate that shoreline to reduce runoff and stabilize the shore banks. I think shoreland is kind of a broad term in this language.
I would agree. Ms. Manning asked one question. As I read the amendment, I just want to be clear for the record, as I read Mr. Knopf's amendment, this would, I believe, if you adopt the amendment, make the language effective the day after enactment.
Yes, Mr. Rice, it leaves in the effective date line on 28.18. The section is effective the day following final enactment, but it would delete the permit authorized shall be issued within 30 days of the effective date.
That just wanted to be clear.
And Mr. Chair, as long as I'm speaking here, I think to save us from two motions, this should just be adopting Section 62 as amended by this amendment. I think that would then you don't have to do a subsequent motion.
Okay, Senator Schmidt makes the following motion to amend Section 62 found on R7 with the A-12 amendment.
And adopt that section.
including adopting Section 62 as amended. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Next item is snowmobile rulemaking. We find that on 54 in section 54 in the House. That's on R27 and 28. And this hand, Mr. Meyer, can you come up and explain this again? This were some things we found. This was department language we came up with in the House. We modified the language to clarify operating on a grant and aid trail during the snowmobile season, which begins on December 1st. Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, you've described it quite well, actually. So we initially had language in our bill that would require the operation of a snowmobile if you had a deer hunting license the same way as an ATV is right now, whereby you can only legally operate it before sunrise between 11 o'clock and 2 a.m. and then a half hour after sunset into the evening. So what we're trying to do is incorporate that same management with snowmobiles. The problem we have is that in the muzzleloader season, which runs until December 15th, it overlaps with the opening of the grant and aid trail system, which is December 1st. So the language in the House bill allows us to fix that overlap, and it will allow us to provide develop a rule to allow that person to use, basically, if you have a deer hunting license, you can still go recreational snowmobile riding during that time frame from December 1st. Actually, it could be December 1st through the end of December, now that I'm thinking of it, because archery season for deer runs until the end of December, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Chair will move the House language on Section 54, the House. Further discussion on the motion? Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against that provision, House Section 54? Being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Section 55, page R28. This has to do with the training of rabbits. you train the rabbit, believe me. The rabbit knows exactly what to do when he's getting chased by a hound. Mr. Meyer, you want to explain this to the folks? We're definitely training the rabbits. If they get used to this stuff. Mr. Bogus is coming forward. So could you explain both training the rabbits and the dogs, please?
Mr. Chair and Conference Committee members, we have various provisions in statute and rule that allow training of dogs, and I was just trying to myself figure out all the dates. But generally speaking, you can train dogs, bird dogs primarily, on public lands during these same dates that are listed for this section for rabbits. You can run raccoons during closed season, so we really don't have any dates for that except for whenever the season's closed. And then for fox, it's mid-March to July 14th. So what this would allow is a person who has probably beagles, which is the most commonly used species for hunting rabbits, to be able to train their dogs at any time during the year, except when this period of time, which in this section is April 16 to July 14, when the rabbits are more vulnerable because they have small young in nests and things like that. So we're generally okay with this. We might have chosen a date that was more similar to when you can train fox, which is mid-March to mid-July, but it's to allow people with dogs an opportunity to train their dogs during a portion of the year when the young are not real vulnerable to being caught by the dogs.
Senator Smith. Your finger up there. Okay, you're starting to act like Fabian. Put that finger up there like that. All right. Questions? Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the training of rabbits and dogs? For Tim McNamara.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to speak for this House provision. It just solidifies that the training of dogs for rabbit hunting would be done similar to what we train for bird dogs. And so I think it makes it consistent and keeps them out of the spring nesting season.
That would be that's the intention of the motion. And Chair moves the House language in favor of the motion. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, so we're going to skip by the muskie for a moment, and we're going to go to the quail recovery plan. The wolf, and we already said we were skipping past the wolf, and now we're going to skip past the muskie, and that'll leave us with three things on the agenda: the shooting range heritage enhancement account, the wolf, and the muskie size limits. Those will be the last things that we do. Senate provision on line, section 63, R29.
Representative
Isaacson.
Sorry, did you say we're going to put off wolf restoration until restitution until the end? Is that what you said?
Next year.
You would ask a wolf supporter like me that question, Representative Isaacson?
You asked us, I trust you as much as that, yeah.
No, we're going to deal with all the wolf items.
All right, just make
momentarily.
Sure. I didn't hear you say that.
Okay, sorry about that.
Same page, that's all.
And now we are going to section 63. Senator Schmidt moves the language found on R29, the quail recovery plan.
Well, Mr. Chair, could I just explain something here briefly? Mm-hmm. Again, you've got provisions that the Senate is carrying here that the House has in the budget bill. There is a more extensive plan and report required in the House side with some money attached to it, $9,000. This is the Senate version without money, basically a detailed feasibility study. So you would have, if you adopt this and then the other one gets adopted in the other bill, you'd have plans that are a little different and money funding one, not in the other.
So it's a Senate-only provision. What would the Senate care to do?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what the Chair cares to do.
Yeah, it is part of the supplemental budget discussions at this stage, and I'm not sure if we have options here. Mr. Knopf, I mean, do we have an option to keep this in here? Would that cause problems? Could the Supplemental Budget Conference Committee address them there?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, it's likely to come out of the supplemental budget bill based on the discussions that I've been involved in.
Right.
Is that it will likely be in the supplemental budget bill with a more detailed report. Now, one of the issues, though, is we talked about a feasibility study, and they actually have a plan for bringing back the quail to southeastern Minnesota. And I know DNR had some concerns about the detailed plan for to bring back the species. And I don't know if they still have any of those concerns or not, if it's with the $9,000 that they may get in the other bill. I don't know.
Sure. Perhaps, Mr. Chair, if the DNR could address the concerns that Mr. Knopf
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair, you know, just as quick background, the quail in Minnesota have not been hunted since, I think it was 1957. But anyway, the season's been closed for a long time. We're at the northern end of the range. Maybe with global warming that will change over time, but even in Iowa to our south, which has somewhat healthy quail populations, they're only healthy kind of in the southern third of the state. So we have serious reservations whether we can actually come up with a good plan to restore quail in Minnesota. The Senate language would ask for a feasibility study before we do a recovery plan, which I think makes sense to first do the feasibility and then do the recovery plan. But, you know, either way it goes, you know, I think a big component even of a restoration plan is going to have to deal with the feasibility of restoring, because a lot of it's related to land use and climate and survivability and all that. So I grew up in quail country, actually, and they're a great bobwhite quail are a great bird, but there's just not a lot of potential right now in Minnesota for doing a lot more for this species. So, you know, we still have concerns with the language that's in the budget bill. We'll do our best with what we end up being told to do.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up, you know, I have folks in southeastern Minnesota who will attest to seeing the bobwhite quail and to believing that its recovery is possible. I'm just curious, just given the fact that the funding for this is up in the air, is there something short of a detailed feasibility study that would allow DNR to do some work on this topic in the next, you know, 9 months or so? And something which we could build off of moving forward that might not have the fiscal impact?
Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, you know, we're certainly working. Pheasants Forever also has a sister organization, Quail Forever, and there's some provisions in the Farm Bill for quail habitat restoration. So there's certain things that can be done to try to help quail in Minnesota, short of a feasibility study or a restoration plan. I think there's enough interest in this topic that it makes sense for us to go through some sort of a planning process, though, or a feasibility process, rather than just continuing to try to do good habitat management in the southeast part of the state, which is the way we've been approaching it in the past. So I think a feasibility study still probably makes sense, just to lay out the issues and more than anything to scope out what it would really take if we were to try to bring back quail. I'm not saying there aren't quail. I'm just saying to bring them back in sort of sustainable numbers.
I can attest that one of the greatest wing shooting events in your life is to go on a real bobwhite quail hunt. Anyway, just going one other thing that's more exciting. in hunting.
They are fun to hunt, yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I actually like this Senate language because one thing, Mr. Bogus, this would require you to come back with a feasibility study. Would that feasibility study, I've always heard it talked about only Houston and Fillmore County, but actually aren't the closest Bob White to us right here at the Capitol in Wisconsin? And they're actually north of Houston and Fillmore County. Would the feasibility study allow you to look at the possibility that we may have Bob White infiltrate from Wisconsin and not necessarily from Iowa or Illinois?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I'm not up to date on the distribution in Wisconsin, but certainly a feasibility study would include looking at Bob White quail distribution around the states that adjoin Minnesota. So that would be part of what we would look at in the feasibility study is where are they in our surrounding states? Are they expanding their range, or could they expand their range? So we would certainly look at that issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to move the Senate language. I actually like this.
Senator Schmidt has moved the Senate language. Well, Any further discussion from the public on the quail recovery plan? There being none, all in favor of the Schmidt motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senate Provision 64, found on R-29, is the Long Lake Fishing Pier. Senator Schmidt?
I'd like to move this, if we could. This comes to us, I believe, from Senator Westrom, actually.
Yes, Mr. Chair, well, Senator Westrom. And this is something that he worked out with the department. They came up and spoke that they were fine
Meyer.
With the language.
Yeah, unless the department...
He's only like a jack in the box.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the department has worked this issue out with Representative Senator Westrom and his constituents, and this language is what we've agreed to.
Okay. Anyone like to testify for or against the Long Lake pier, fishing pier provision? There being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Schmidt provision prevails. Now, do we, Senator Schmidt, do we want to go up and get see if we can get Senator Hoffman for a few minutes?
Yeah, why don't we see if we can get Senator Hoffman? And Mr. Chair, if you'd like to begin the conversation on the wolf provisions, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Now, we're going to go back to... the first wolf provision was on House Section R-40 on R-21. And let me, I'll give you a little background on this. And then, first off, let's have on R-21, Section 40, Representative Isaacson will move the language starting on 8.23. Oh, we're moving the Senate language on that. So Representative Isaacson will move the Senate language. And could, Mr. Knopf, could you tell us the difference between the Senate and the House language there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the difference is basically that the House requires a quarterly report on known wolf deaths, and the Senate says that they're supposed to compile a list and keep that on the Internet, but then update it quarterly. So instead of issuing a report every quarter, they update the list on a quarterly basis.
Mr. Bogus, could you come up? Based on line 21.24 in the Senate language says, based on reporting by conservation officers. Is it the department's interpretation, or can you tell me how this is going to be interpreted with regard to the wolves that are taken during illegal hunt, trapping, or otherwise? How is that going to be interpreted? Because I remember that the any wolves harvested have to be reported to the department. Tell me what that means to you.
Mr. Chair, what our interpretation of this language is that our conservation officers right now fill out a wolf incident report form every time they get a report of a wolf killed accidentally, illegally, found dead, or whatever. It's not our interpretation that this would include wolves legally taken during the season, or wolves taken by depredation. We do separate reports on those. Those are publicly available already.
Representative Isaacson.
Chairman Dill, the intent of the language as it came out of the House, and I can see where we might have a disagreement interpretation, was that any wolves outside of hunting would be reported in this quarterly report.
Isn't that what you said?
Mr. Chair and Representative Isaacson, that was not our interpretation. We didn't know what the intent was. We thought it was that you were trying to get at those reported to conservation officers.
So, Mr. Boggess, if a wolf were hit by a pulp truck and it were reported, that doesn't mean that it gets reported by someone, a passerby.
Right.
That means a conservation officer would fill out an incident report on it, and that would be reported.
Yes.
Representative Isaacson.
It would be my wish that this would be read so it was clear that it's directing the DNR to report any wolf death that's not a part, that is reported to them in whatever fashion, that is not part of the actual recreational hunt.
Oh, Mr. Boggess, I think you said that for in the case of depredation, there's a report filled out.
Mr.
And
Chair.
There's a payment made. If it's even if there isn't a payment made, there's a depredation report filled out, whether it was or was not. And what was the other instance that you cited?
Mr. Chair, I said that we were not interpreting this to include wolves taken during illegal seasons and registered, which we compile a report on that every year, or wolves taken under a depredation program because we compile a report on that every year. If that was the intent, I'm just saying we just didn't understand the intent.
Sure.
Representative Isaacson.
So I don't know how to do this because we don't usually operate like this in the House, but I would like to amend this to read that any report that they receive, whatever it might be, that involves reporting a death of a wolf for whatever reason outside of recreational hunting is included in this quarterly update.
Is that okay? So
I don't know how to do that in an amendment, though. That'd be the question.
Let me ask Mr. Boggess. Someone calls and reports a wolf, but a conservation officer doesn't go out to actually view the wolf. How would that be reported?
Shouldn't be reported.
Or would a conservation officer go out in every case of a wolf? Because I don't want to open the door to having people calling and saying, well, a wolf got run over by a truck and it didn't really happen.
Right.
Or they can't find it. You know, something like, I don't want to open the door. Mr. Soaring's coming forward here. Welcome again, Mr. Soaring.
Mr. Chair, we would, at this time, we do investigate any reported wolf death through this, what we call a WRF report, wolf incident report form. And that would be for car-killed wolves, wolves that kill each other, any incidental death of a wolf. We do not complete one of those for lawfully taken during the season or wolves that are reported through the depredation program where wolves are removed by trappers. That's summary data that's available from the trapping programs.
So a federal trapper takes a wolf, a problem wolf, let's say, in a small community. The DNR doesn't participate in that discussion and has no reporting on it. Is that correct?
What we have is we open an area for wolf control activity, and we would either use a federal trapper or the state certified wolf controllers. So there's a permit issued, and then the data from those, how many of those wolves are taken, is part of a report already.
Mr. Chair, on the federal program, since delisting, the state actually contracts with USDA Wildlife Services, and so they are actually a contractor for us, and they do provide us with summary data. But it's more on an annual basis, not a quarterly basis.
Representative Isaacson.
If it makes it easier in the sense that I don't, you know, if you're tracking some of these, because I realize we're talking about different ranges of wolf mortality, and if some of them are just by your natural systems tracked yearly, I'd be okay with that. I don't want to make it unnecessarily burdensome that way, but it'd be my intent. And what I was trying to accomplish with this discussion was that anytime we have a wolf mortality that is not related to recreational hunting, that it is reported on the website and there is a count. That's my concern. That's what I'm trying to accomplish here. Of the number of the deaths, And I don't care where they're coming from, if it's from depredation or if you've hired a federal trapper to do it, or if it's an accidental wolf kill. If they're being reported to you that there is a wolf death, I would like that count at some point quarterly. And then if there's a few other thing exceptions that we'd have to do annually, that'd be fine. But I'd want to see that reported on the website.
Well, I have a letter here for Mr. I'm just going to read it. I don't know if it makes it better or worse, but in the letter from the commissioner, it says that the DNR will agree to publish summary data on our website on a quarterly basis for all known wolf deaths reported by conservation officers on wolf incident report forms.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a little late to be drafting new language. Although I know what your intent is, I don't know if we need new language, or I guess I defer to counsel on that to see if, from what you heard, if there's anything we need to put in the language to clarify what Representative Isaacson's intent is, because, I mean, I support the intent of what he's trying to accomplish here, and I accepted that, what I believe to be the intent, when we did the bill on the House floor. So, Mr. Knopf,
I think that, can I make one comment on that? In the discussions I had with the DNR and other folks, I think where the miscommunication is coming through is I said that I wanted any wolf death done, and when I talked with Bob and received that letter, the understanding was is that what I was asking for was accomplished. And now what I'm seeing is that they're saying anything reported to your conservation officers that would not necessarily include the depredation aspect or other things, and that'd be my concern, is that we're kind of mincing words here when the spirit was quite clearly understood by both sides when the agreement was made.
Mr. Boggs.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to offer something, but first I would say that, you know, the language that we were basing that letter off of was the language in the bill that said based on reporting by conservation officers, and I think we just had some misunderstanding
right.
of what
yes.
was reported by conservation
exactly.
officers.
Yes.
And we do make the annual season information available on the website now on an annual basis, obviously, because that only occurs, you know, the limited time of the year. We do compile the depredation deaths on an annual basis right now. I'm not certain that that is available on our website, but we certainly could commit to making that available on our
Great.
Website. If a quarterly basis for that would be a little problematic,
sure.
but we could certainly have all of that information on our website. And we'll commit to doing that.
Okay.
President McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify, I think we're talking about three different, there's a group that are taken legally in the hunt. There's mm-hmm. a group that are taken for depredation by the federal or state group.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, for lack of another term, all the other. Could be one illegally taken, hit by a car,
mm-hmm.
Killed by each other, which happens. So kind of for lack of a better term, you could have three different columns, but those three columns together would tell people the wolf situation on an annual basis. And did I understand that currently some of those aren't necessarily done quarterly, but they're done at least annually?
Mm-hmm.
And this part, the third group, you will do quarterly, but the depredation, you don't necessarily do quarterly now, but you do it at least annually.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, yes.
And it seems, Mr. Chair, if I could, if the interest groups, I think, on both sides are in agreement that that's what we're talking about here and that's what will work, that you would have, for lack of a better term, three different columns, but either Representative Isaacson or myself or Representative Dill could tell by looking at those three columns what's going on each year. That's what I think we all want to have happen, and that's consistent with what Commissioner Landwehr wrote, I believe.
So we have the Senate language before us that Representative Isaacson moves. Representative Isaacson, do you have any amendments to the Senate language?
I think if we have an understanding on the record, what I think Representative McNamara clearly articulated, and that's something you guys are comfortable with, especially as we state that we're talking about the quote-unquote all other category is quarterly and the other two are annually, or, you know, whenever the hunt is done and you've compiled it, that's fine. I'm comfortable with that at this point. And I don't know that we need to have language, do we?
No. And they actually, currently, DNR is almost every day updating the hunt, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you have to. So that, right. that information is almost
live.
Real time.
Yep, mm-hmm. That's great. There's one other question I have for the DNR that I'd like to just have it clearly on record so we have an understanding. It is my understanding, and I've been told, that we were going to have, over the next 3 years, a population survey. And what I was told by Bob Meyer was, pending that the House appropriates the money for it as we move forward, that there is an understanding, and Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, that we make sure you have the money to take the survey, that you're going to do the population survey over the next 3 years as to comply with the federal government. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Representative Isaacson, that is not before us. The study was Section C of the mm-hmm. language in the House, and that language did not prevail, and it did not prevail in the Senate either, and so that language is not before us at this time.
Sure.
So we are referring to the language in the Senate language that you have moved, okay. and that if you... Mr. Bogus, do you understand the issues that Representative Isaacson is discussing regarding the Senate language?
Mr. Chair, I do, and I would just repeat our commitment to posting that data, you know, on a quarterly basis for our Wolf Incident Report Form data, and as, you know, we get it at least on an annual basis, if not more frequently, for depredation and for... wolf harvest.
Okay, Representative Isaacson.
And can we just be clear that if I know on the website you were post the report, Bob showed me that. Can we be clear that this is all in like the same general area on one maybe count so we're not jumping all over the place? It's easy to find, it's one stop shopping, so to speak.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Isaacson, I can make sure it's all in the same, whether it's, you know, right on the same page, but at least tabbed on the same page.
That'd be helpful. Thank you.
And anyone to testify for or against the Senate language has been moved by Representative Isaacson. Anyone in the audience? Any further questions by the members? The chair will call a roll call on this specific thing.
15 we'll, hands? No?
No, we want this on the record. The chair votes aye. So, Representative Isaacson.
Aye.
McNamara.
Aye.
Rood, Senator Rood.
Aye.
Senator Schmidt.
Aye.
Unanimous. Motion prevails.
Okay.
So, the next item we have, let's do the second wolf item, which you will find on, and we'll try and close that out. We'll find that on R-40 of the House. R-56.
No.
And
Section 56?
R-28.
R-28, sorry. Section 56. And Representative Isaacson, would you... Representative Isaacson will move the House language, and then could you explain what happened here?
How much do you want me to explain? There's
well,
a lot
so
that
everyone understands it and can come forward and comment on it. It's a
right.
fairly issue of great interest.
Well, I had brought forth several amendments, and of them we were able to find some peace in the valley on a couple of them. One was the one we just went through, and the other one, which was also supported by the DNR and in my understanding the commissioner, was the idea that we would basically double the poaching fines is after your first offense, after your second offense, if I remember correctly, and I would be okay if it was after one offense too. Double the fines for poaching wolves. So if you get caught illegally hunting wolves, you would have to pay twice the fine the second time.
Representative Isaacson, you moved the House language, and you'd have to make an amendment to the House language.
No, I think I meant to say what the House language was if I wasn't clear. Okay. I had said that I'd be okay if we moved it but differently, but I think the language is fine the way it is, too.
All right, very good. And then, Senator Schmidt, can you explain why, when you took up the House file, what happened on this particular amendment?
Mr. Chair, if I recall, there was a thorough discussion on the House or on the Senate floor regarding this provision of the bill, and there was an amendment to take it out, actually. So we did have a vote on the Senate floor to remove this section. But I understand that this is part of a broader agreement with the stakeholders in the DNR. But I should reflect that, that provision did not have support on the full Senate floor. So,
testify for or against in the audience? Mr. Meyer, or Mr. Bogus, actually, could you come up and tell us about, I think in listening to the testimony on this provision in the Senate, there was some discussion about a precedent that was being set about doubling restitution. Is there a place in law currently that establishes multiple restitution values after one, two, three, four, five incidents?
Mr. Chair, the short answer is that there's not that I'm aware of. And just maybe as, again, quick background, restitution values were established by rule at the direction of the legislature probably 20 years or so ago, and they were intended to identify the value of an animal that's illegally killed, whether it's by poaching or a spill or whatever. So restitution values were established for all species. And then certain species were valued higher. There was a consultant hired. There was public surveys done. There was economic analysis done. So restitution values were supposed to be based on the value of the animal to the citizens of the state, because wildlife belongs to the citizens of the state, and to basically, in addition to whatever criminal penalties there were, to make that person pay back their debt to society of what they took illegally from society. So, but there are certainly restitution values that are higher for a trophy animal, that are higher for an endangered animal. That's actually why the restitution value for wolves used to be higher. Used to be, I think, $2,000 when they were on the endangered list, because endangered species were valued at a higher restitution price than non-endangered species. So to my knowledge, this is the only time that we're now using restitution values as more of a penalty provision driven by a violation record rather than by the value of the animal.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bogus, would it be better if we said a person convicted of one or more prior convictions for the taking of wolf will be subject to a fine equal to the restitution value? So you're not changing the restitution value. The wolf is a... So then if you want to change the value later, but you just subject them to a fine because they were convicted once before, don't we have other times we do that? We charge people more when they've been a repeat violator. I mean, that's the intention here, is to have it cost people more when they do this, something this bad. Would that be a better way of wording it?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, that might work. Colonel Sorin might know more about that. I would say that, you know, we were okay with doing it, but it is a different application of restitution principles than what has been done previously, which I think was the precedent question.
Welcome again, Representative Isaacson. So Representative Root.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I think it would be more appropriate to have an enhanced penalty section like we do for, say, DWI cases or repeat offenders, rather than to set a precedent that the restitution value is higher.
Senator Rood.
And Mr. Chair, I do believe that was the in the Senate, that's the problem that we had, not that we didn't want to, if someone took a wolf illegally, pay more, but the language here is a little clumsy in that in defining restitution, and so, you know, maybe the enhanced penalty would be a better way of doing it. We're not adverse to, you know, fining people for taking the wolf. It's just that the language is a little problematic.
Representative Isaacson.
That makes complete sense. I get what you're saying, and I understand now the kind of the precedent of restitution versus an enhanced penalty, and I'm just wondering, is there a way to include that in this or redefine this?
We would have to have language.
Mr. Chair, I would not recommend doing this in rulemaking. This would be, you would want to put this in the statute.
Right. I want to put
we
it
don't
in the
put,
statute.
We don't put penalties in rulemaking, generally, and deciding penalties in rulemaking.
So we're going to lay the Isaacson motion, withdraw the Isaacson motion for the moment. We're going to go to the Muskies, and we're going to give counsel a few moments to see what they can come up with for some language. Ms. Taylor and Representative Isaacson, if you could get started on that as soon as possible. And if you use Mr. Bogus and Well, Colonel Soaring for sure, and others for references to get this done. We'd like to close out the conference committee, and I think all of us have shown that we want to accommodate the idea that we penalize someone who illegally takes certainly more than one wolf. So that brings us to the muskie language. And this is a Senator Hoffman creation, I believe. And it is on it is in section 60 R29 at the top right of the page. And Senator Schmidt moves the language. And if you could explain to us what it does, or do you want the department to come up and explain that? Or would you like Mr. Knopf to explain
it? Well,
would you like to explain it?
You know what, I'll lay the groundwork here, and Mr. Knopf can follow up. We had a thorough discussion of this provision throughout the course of the committee process, beginning in the Game and Fish Subcommittee. And we feel as though this is the strongest language for us to first of all, set an increased minimum size limit for the muskie, to acknowledge that in the metropolitan area we could move forward with a smaller limit for the tiger muskie, and then also have some authority for the DNR to acknowledge that in certain cases the limit should be less than 54 inches, and allow them expedited rulemaking authority to come up with that list of lakes. And so this, I'll tell you, we've heard from a lot of muskie advocates. We've reached out to a variety of stakeholders, been talking with DNR at every step in the committee process, and I believe that this is language that we can feel good about, and that's why it's in the bill. And I can't tell you, I've only been doing this for a couple of years, but I haven't heard from a group more excited about a provision in a Game and Fish bill than muskie fishermen. And they're just absolutely convinced that moving in this direction is going to further establish Minnesota's place on the map in terms of trophy recreational muskie fishing. And we've heard from a number of resorts and others who think that this is going to be a great attractor of muskie fishermen and women. So with that said, Mr. Knopf,
Mr. Chair, I have nothing to add to that. Great job of describing.
Representative Isaacson.
Oh, good. Did you?
Well, I was just going to say, Mr. Chair, we really did have a lot of conversation on this, and of course, when we first started, we started at 55 for the whole state of Minnesota, and so and in the conversations and in all the testimony we had, and we had some really great testimony in committee. I think this is language that really addresses some of the problems that they brought forth about the metro lakes and how big the tiger muskies would be. And so I think this is really good language. We worked hard on this language.
Representative Isaacson.
I have to say that had I had this language, other than the language I had, I probably would have brought that forward for sure. I would think that's an excellent it's amazing what a hearing on a bill can do to allow it to mature and grow a little bit. So I think that's a great idea.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just add, I had recognized Senator Hoffman as the hero of the muskie fishermen and of the muskie throughout the committee process. But on the floor, Senator Ruda was very eloquent in making a case for why this is important. In any event, I think it just speaks to the popularity of this this provision.
Mr. Boggess. Departments of read on this language.
Mr. Chair, we don't have a position on this language. We can certainly make this language work. The only suggestion, I guess, if the committee is going to adopt this, we're currently in the process of doing a permanent rulemaking. We're quite a ways into it. That would change the current statewide muskie minimum is in rule, and it's at 48. We have another rule that we're in the middle of that would move that up to 50, with the exceptions that are listed in here for tiger muskie lakes and that sort of a thing. So on line 27.28, where it gives the commissioner authority to establish a minimum size of 48 on other lakes, we would like a little additional flexibility on that. Mm-hmm. That line that would say of at least 48 inches to allow us to maybe do a 50 on some other lakes, and I think the muskie people would be fine with that approach. That's what we're currently working on.
Okay, so we've got both of our staff folks working on the first Isaacson Amendment, and now we're working on more Isaacson Amendments. So if we could just take a moment, Mr. Knopf, if you could repeat that.
Mr. Chair, I heard what Mr. Boggess mentioned, and this actually was a discussion. I had an earlier version of this amendment that had those exact words, and was told by the people, the Muskies groups, that they wanted a lake to be either 54 or 48. They didn't want something in between. And so that's why it was then changed to the way it is now, where it's either 54 or 48. I don't know if they've changed their mind or if they want to put this at 50 now, but I was told to take out the at least.
Okay. Representative Isaacson?
I've been advocating this in the House side, not quite as successfully as the senator has, and I think that it makes sense, and I'm comfortable with that.
The language as stated?
The at least that the DNR is asking for.
Mr. Chair, I was unaware of what Mr. Knopf just said, and I know some of the Muskie folks are here, so maybe they do have an issue with it.
Okay, let's hear from the Muskie folks. Welcome. If you'll give your name for the record, please, and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, John Underhill, Minnesota Muskie Pike Alliance. I think the provision to go to 50 inches as opposed to 48, what we were thinking the 48 was something that everyone would be comfortable with on the lakes that have the Chupac strain and the strain of muskies that we know very, very rarely. I think there's only been one that the DNR has caught. I believe it was on Spider Lake that was 48 inches several years ago. That was a Chupac fish. So it's very rare that they would ever get to 48. So we were comfortable with those that number for those lakes. But if the DNR would prefer to go to 50 inches on those lakes, I don't believe that would be an issue. The only thing that that would concern us at all is that they would impose that 50-inch on all lakes and then leave only a few at 54. And the concern that was brought to us by the resort community, especially in the Brainerd or Bemidji area and north of Walker, is that the DNR would put 54 on one of the lakes, so they would have an unfair competitive advantage over their neighboring lake, say Big to Bemidji to Plantagenet. So that was where our concern was with the language that
makes sense.
That's our only concern. Otherwise, if they would like to go to those lakes with 50, I guess our only concern is that they would say that out of the 116 lakes, there's going to be 100 of them that are going to be at 50 and 16 of them that are going to be at 54, and that some of those resorts will suffer because of it. And that was the only concern that we have. Otherwise, I don't have a problem with it.
Senator, Representative Isaacson.
Yeah, I think that's compelling, and I would retract my previous comment and say that makes sense to make it an even playing field for all people. And I would want to defer to the idea that it's consistent, whether it's 48 or 50 inches.
So the length, Senator Schmidt.
You know, if I could, Mr. Chair, thank you. If I could ask a follow-up question of Mr. Boggess, if you'd mind joining us. And sir, if you'd mind just talking a little bit about the rulemaking process underway with raising the current limit from 48 inches to 50 inches, and if it would be wise, given those discussions with the DNR, to amend this to read instead of 48 inches, 50 inches, and that I think addresses the concern that's come up regarding competitiveness, but it also acknowledges the DNR has done a lot of internal work already regarding the kind of a blanket increase from 48 to 50.
Mr. Boggs.
Mr. Chair and Senator Schmidt, I know we're amending the rule to make the statewide minimum move it up 2 inches from 48 to 50. I'm not positive sitting here at this moment if we have any additional exceptions other than the seven county metro Tiger Muskie Lakes, but it would certainly be consistent with the direction that we were trying to move to change the 48 is the current rule, but we're trying to change it to 50.
Representative Isaacson.
And then, Mr. Boggess, could you speak to the concern that was just raised by Muskies, Inc. about the 54 and just a couple lakes and 50 across the board with the idea that is that something that we should be worried about, or?
Mr. Boggess.
Mr. Chair and Representative Isaacson, we've previously indicated that there were probably a couple of dozen lakes in the state that could produce, you know, 55-inch class muskies, which is what the original Senate bill had in it, and that the others probably are questionable if they could do that. So so there was language for a while here that would have required us to go to that higher limit on, you know, a couple of dozen lakes or so. But having said that, in order for us to change it by rule, we have to post, we have to have public meetings. You know, if we get this pretty clear direction from the legislature that the statewide standard now is 54 and the exception is what we do by rule, I don't see us doing that on a tremendous number of lakes. I think it would be pretty selectively done.
So is there an amendment to strike 48 and put 48 in there now and make it 50?
You know, I don't need it. I guess I was just in the sake of uniformity and also building off of what Mr. Boggess had mentioned previously about DNR's internal conversations about moving up to 50. I don't feel passionate about it necessarily, so I'll withdraw that amendment. Let's just leave well enough alone here.
So we have the Senate language before us. Anyone like to testify for or against the Senate language on the muskies? Thank you for coming forward. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Boggess, what do we do on board? This amendment is silent to border waters.
Oh. Yeah, speaking of those border waters.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, what was the question? Boundary waters?
Border
waters?
Border waters, both Canadian and Wisconsin, I think, both have muskies.
So is the question, what's the current rule on those waters?
Well, how is this affected?
This
Mr.
would not,
Chair, Director Boggess, how would they be affected by this amendment?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, they would not be affected by this.
It's only inland waters.
It's for inland waters.
Anyone else testify for or against? In favor of the Isaacson motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We are back to the last provision, I believe, unless corrected. Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Is the Ms. Taylor and Mr. Knopf, did you come up with some language? If you could tell us what that is. We're back on to the Wolf. In House Section 56, page R28, and there's a potential substitute language for the House language. Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, it would be a new coded section, Section 97B.331, Subdivision 8, that would read, a person that unlawfully takes, transports, or possesses a wolf in violation of the game and fish laws that has one or more prior convictions involving the taking of wolves is liable for a civil penalty equal to the restitution value of a wolf. So this would be on top of the existing restitution value.
So just, okay.
Mr. O'Rourke, you got something to say about this? You've had a lot to say whole session. We're ready to hear from you. Anyone like to testify for or against the Isaacson motion, which is about to be made? Isaacson moved the language as read by Ms. Taylor.
Yes.
Which is an amendment to the House language found on Section 56, R28. Further discussion by the public or by the members? There being none, roll calls requested. Chairman Dill votes aye. Representative McNamara.
Aye.
Isaacson.
Aye.
Rood. Senator.
Aye.
And Senator Schmidt.
Aye.
Unanimous motion.
Gosh.
Motion prevailed. Very good. Thank you, Council. The last item is on the the Heritage Enhancement Account. And we find that language in Section 50 of the House, Section 57 of the Senate, on our 25 and 27. And we had had a discussion, and I had previously moved the House language. Ms. Taylor. Mr. Knopf. The way I read the Senate language, is there anything in the Senate language that then directs the $164,000 that I directed in the House language to the trap shooting facilities?
Mr. Chair, no. What it says is the $200,000, I mean, they've already spent some of it on the pre-design for the seven county metro area one, and then it would give them flexibility to spend to establish basic hunter education, firearm safety, and archery ranges on public land. So they could use the $164,000 that's remaining for that, and then we take the $100,000 on the Senate side and use it for a grant to the Itasca County Gun Club. But the money would be used by DNR to provide those and not as grants to clubs. Again, on the Senate, in the budget bill, what the Senate did was to provide $2 million in new game and fish money for the purposes of the grant program.
But we don't know. That hasn't been finalized, and we're finalizing our bill. This is the last item that we're finalizing.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the $2 million is game and fish, so it's not going to be subtracted from the general fund. It won't be part of their target. It'll be something they can do if they want to.
The reason that I took it from the Heritage Enhancement Account from the original $300,000 is so that we don't take it from the Game and Fish Fund, so that we don't take it. I didn't agree with Senator Tomasoni to take any money from the Game and Fish Fund to fund this program this year, and Mr. Meyer told me that in the coming year we'll have plenty of Pittman-Robertson money to fund this trap shooting project as well as other projects. And so I want to make sure before I leave this table that the balance of the $300,000 appropriation is going to be spent on the trap shooting facilities. It's not a lot of money, but I want to make sure that we set a precedent that we have a program that directs money there, and then in the coming years we can make an appropriation in an appropriations bill to fund that language or fund other language that someone else may pass. Unless I've totally missed something, I don't see that the Senate language spends the money on the trap shooting facilities specifically.
Mr. Chair, you'd be correct in that.
I move the House language. Discussion on the motion. Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask, is there a reason why the Itasca Gun Club is specifically in there?
Yes. Senator Saxhog, that was a provision that Senator Saxhog had, and that gun club is located on school trust land and must be moved.
Okay.
And that is the reason for the appropriation out of that. And he called me early last summer when this came to light and asked me if he could get some of that $300,000 that we initially appropriated, and I said yes.
And Mr. Chair, what are we going to do with the school trust land?
Hopefully we're going to make some revenue off of it.
Yeah, I mean, is there plans to then plant that, or what kind of land is it?
I'm sorry, as much as I've been to the thought of every gun club in the North, I haven't been to that.
It's
McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rood, it's a mining site. It will be mined.
Okay, so that's why.
That's correct. That is the reason.
And so then we're moving that gun club to do that.
So there'll be money coming in from every direction as that ore starts coming out of the ground.
Nice.
Chair, I believe that it actually might be a brownfield site that Magnetia is going to go back in and reclaim.
Yeah, that's a Magnetia site, isn't it, Mr. Meyer?
I believe it actually is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, you are correct, and we do support the transfer to Itasca County Gun Club. And Mr. Chairman, we fully understand and sincerely appreciate your desire to get this program up and running. I'm pretty confident that the language that's in the Supplemental Budget Conference Committee will be adopted. I don't see that being part of the issues here at all. We can work with you on this if it's your desire to use this as seed money. It would be our intention to come back next year trying to fund how do we increase our capacity for these hunter education sites on state lands as well. And just one point of clarification, even though we're talking about the Pittman Robertson dollars, they are deposited in the game of fish funds, so technically we're spending game of fish fund dollars. So.
Mr. Chair?
Federwood.
Well, I just want to show you this. This is what's happening in my area. This is me shooting trap this summer, and we have a great program, and our program has grown so much for the kids in our area that we actually split. We were Pine River, Pequot Lakes Combined Club, and so this year we have so many kids out that we have split, so the two schools have their own clubs, and so I applaud you for this. This is a great thing that's happening in the state of Minnesota, and we need to encourage it.
Chair renews his motion for the House language. All in favor? Oh, Senator Schmidt.
I would just like the record to show that I fought till the end for the Senate language, but that I also can I can count, and I think I know where this is going. So I just wanted the record to reflect
that. Dagger in you,
Senator. I'm holding it back tonight.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And Mr. Knopf, can you give us the appropriate motion to complete the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the motion to move all the previously adopted motions and amendments for the Conference Committee on Game and Fish be adopted as a Conference Committee report and give staff some leeway to make any technical adjustments necessary to get to effectuate your desires. For your desired
questions
outcome.
On the motion? Being none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Conference Committee is adjourned. Right. Thank you very much.
That's right.
Best of
the
usual.
Oh, yeah, got to be 2,164,000. You know, there's no reason for Senator Schmidt to have done that.
You almost recognize.
I
exactly.